Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Leanin' with Jeff. The weather is absolutely amazing today, so I hope you guys have a chance to go outside and enjoy the sun. Today's episode, I have two lovely guests here today to share their summer update. I'm sure you guys all have some stories by now, since it's around halfway into the summer, and we have a month and a half left. So, before we get into the stories that I have for you guys today, let's get through the station ID and we will begin soon. Here we go.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra Siam, Nisiyam,
Nisiyaya, Anthasyakuya, Talitin, Homasquim, Mustail. All right, and we are back. Let's get right into it. I'm excited for this episode. Do you guys want to introduce your guys' name, maybe, and then what you guys do? Just a brief introduction.
What's up, everybody? My name is Mark. And I am a freshly graduated psychology major at UBC.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. My name's Matthew. I'm very much looking forward to our conversation today. I'm going to third year in the acting program here at UBC.
Thank you, Mark and Matthew, for coming on my show. It's going to be a nice episode. Matthew, is this your first time on the radio? I'm not quite sure.
Yes, it was okay. My first time ever on radio.
I'm sure it's exciting. I still remember my first time, and I was really nervous, but it's going to be a fun episode. Like I said, everyone, today's concept and today's topic is going to be an update on our summer so far. I hope you guys went on some sort of trip or some sort of vacation, because it's important to have some time for yourself and enjoy the nice weather. So why don't we start with Mark? I heard that you went somewhere during the early month or something like that. Why don't you share a bit about where you went and how that was?
Yeah, for sure. So during the month of June, I pretty much went on a three-week trip to Hong Kong. And so Hong Kong is where my family is from. It's where my parents were born and raised in before they immigrated to Canada. So we went back to Hong Kong for 3 weeks. And during the time, we also were able to visit China, which is where my grandparents currently, they retire in. It was a pretty cool experience. I mean, it was really hot every day, so definitely not Vancouver weather, in the sense that, you know, you can go outside and enjoy walking and go for picnics. When I was in Hong Kong, it was like a complete 180. So like, no one really wants to be outside. When you go outside, your next immediate objective is to go back inside. So it's like, what is the fastest way to go into the next shopping mall, the next restaurant, the next rest area? So the weather was really hot, but in terms of the culture, the lifestyle, the food, it's amazing. It's amazing. I had a lot of food there, gained a lot of weight, but I'm back here. I'm trying to cut that down, hopefully for the next month.
I've never been to Hong Kong before. What's the difference between a hot weather there compared to in Vancouver?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think it's probably similar to a lot of different Asian countries, in the sense that it's really humid there. So I think in Vancouver, when it's hot, that the temperature itself is warm, it's hot. But it's not humid or wet. But when you're in Hong Kong, it's not only it's hot, it's almost like your skin's like wet when you're outside. So imagine like, it's not a sauna, but it's like a steam room. So there's always like hot mist that's like hitting your body. So your shirt is always going to feel like just slightly moist. Your skin is always going to be slightly moist. Added with the amount of sweat that you have, because it's close to 40 degrees. And Yeah, it's a recipe for a lot of aggression. So my mother was really mad a lot of the time. A lot of people in the streets are very mad a lot of times just because heat is typically a prerequisite for aggression, right? So there's a little psychology fact for you guys. So heat is a prerequisite for aggression. So a lot of angry people, but it's very hot. I'd say a similar comparison would be how the type of cold in Vancouver is different from the cold you get in Calgary, per se. So in Vancouver, when it's cold, it's actually more humid cold. Whereas when you're in Calgary and it's cold, you don't feel like it's that cold because you're not wet, if that kind of makes sense.
No, I think it does. I think I might prefer the heat in Vancouver just because I just don't do well in humid environments because I'm just, I already sweat naturally a lot, so it's combined with that and humidity, it's just not the greatest. But at the same time, the sun in Vancouver, or around here at least, it physically stings. Like, you could feel the heat just beaming onto your skin. Do you feel that as well, Matthew, where it's like, you know, in Vancouver, when you're outside for a long period of time, you can kind of, it's like a very thin layer of stinging going on, where, you know, you feel that.
Definitely. I'm not sure about, like, the facts of it, but I feel like maybe the elevation or something, the sun feels stronger in Vancouver as opposed to in some of the other hotter places I've been in Asia. I don't feel as vulnerable to, like, sunburns and things like that.
Yeah. Let's go back to the beginning of your trip. So I'm sure a lot of people have some issues, you know, within the airports, and if you had some layovers, you probably have to deal with some things there. How was that whole process like? Was the flight smooth? You know, how was the airline food? How was the, you know, the trip to the airport? How was that like?
Yeah, so I did go solo. So when I went to Hong Kong, I went on the plane solo. And the reason why was because it was supposed to be a family trip with the rest of my family. But my dad was a little bit impatient when it came to buying the tickets. So he really wanted to buy the tickets right away because he thought that the prices were going to skyrocket, which is a reasonable belief. But I was graduating in May, and so I wasn't sure when I could actually leave Canada. And so I decided to wait, and they proceeded with their tickets, and I bought my own. So flying solo is definitely, you know, a little bit nerve-wracking sometimes because, you know, if you come into any trouble with immigration, there's no one really there to help you. You're just kind of on your own. But everything went relatively smoothly. So I got on the plane, I boarded fine, but I was by myself. So it's a bit of a coin flip, especially the fact that I was in the middle seat. So if I get sandwiched between two problematic people, that wasn't quite the best experience. But it was okay. So I guess the actual flight experience, I was able to go to the washroom like two times, which I'm happy about. I would have preferred to be able to go to the washroom a few more times. But if you're in the middle seat, it's kind of hard to get up, especially when someone's like watching the movie or they're asleep. So kind of just have to, you have to thug it out. In terms of the airplane food, I rode with Air Canada. I mean, their food's okay. It's not bad. I wouldn't say it's the best. The bread was a bit cold, but I do notice something that's really, like, I don't know why, but every time I've ridden with an airline, sometimes when I order a Diet Coke, they give me, like, a cup, and they put, like, ice in the cup, and they pour, like, the Diet Coke in the cup, and they give me the cup. And the other times when I ask for a Diet Coke, they just give me the entire can of Coke. Like, has that happened to you?
That's a good question. I always, when I ask for drinks, it's always the cup with the ice. Mm. Yeah, I don't think I've ever experienced just they give you a whole can. I think it would almost make more sense if they give it through a cup because that cup alone feels like one third maybe. Like, right. You only need like a third of a can to fill the cup, but I don't know what, Matthew, have you experienced where they gave you a whole can? Because I've never...
Not for like soft drinks. This might be common knowledge, but I didn't know until my recent flight back home. Airlines, like, they offer small bottles of alcohol, whether it's like... Johnny Walker, I believe. It's like a whiskey of some sort. I personally don't drink alcohol, but I do cook, and so sometimes I use, you know,
Johnny Walker.
Maybe a red wine or a white wine. So, yeah, this time around when I flew back, when they asked me what drink I wanted, I just asked for a wine, and they gave me like this decently small sized bottle of red wine that I just brought home. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. I didn't know.
Wow, that's very useful.
Very useful. Yeah,
and it's free. Yeah. It's completely free.
And it's from
the
house.
Oh, wait, when you. Even the Johnny Walkers, they just give it to you?
Yeah.
I think alcohol was available on my flight, too.
I see. Yeah. Sorry. Depends on, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, moving back just a little bit when you were talking about, you know, the middle seat, for me personally, as I got older, I prefer sitting in the aisle.
Right.
I loved the window seat, and I still do. But, you know, now that I have a more realistic sense of a mind, I'd rather choose the aisle. Is that the same with you guys as well?
Yeah, for sure. I think, like, on my return flight, I picked the aisle seat. And I picked it so I was right beside the bathroom because I want to be a realistic person, right? It's like, when the food comes, I'm the first to get the food.
Yeah.
When the drinks come, I'm the first to get the drinks. You know, I mean, sometimes I might be there is one thing is that if you fall asleep and it's a long international flight, you're kind of being a jerk because now people can't get out without
sleeping is real tough to, I mean, thankfully when I was going to Toronto, I was in the middle seat and the person beside me, she was really kind enough to, you know, tell me, you know, I'm going to take a nap, but if you ever need to go to the washroom, just give me a little tap and I'll just move. And I'm like, wow, thank you. You know, that's very kind. You know, if they address it immediately like that, it's comfortable for me. It's comfortable for her. I think it just goes well with both ways.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. 100%.
But yeah, no, continue on with your story. So you booked the flights, middle seat.
Yes,
only
sir.
Went twice to the washroom. But yeah, how was the rest like?
It was great. So I got off the plane. I was tired, but I went through, you know, immigration, everything was just fine. When I did arrive to Hong Kong, I love Hong Kong. You know, I wasn't born there. I wasn't born in Hong Kong, but my parents were born in Hong Kong, and Hong Kong is such a big, big part of my identity, right? I grew up watching Hong Kong TV shows, variety shows, reality shows, different dramas, movies. And I grew up eating the food. I grew up learning the slang, the language, everything. So for me, Hong Kong, going to Hong Kong is a really big deal. And I've been there a lot of times throughout my life. But every time I go, it's the same nostalgic feeling. So as soon as I get off the plane and I walk towards the exit, the open exit of the airport, I feel the humid like heat starting to like wrap around my skin, and it doesn't feel comfortable. It doesn't feel good, but I've developed a liking for it because it feels like home, right? And I remember that you walk out to the exit, and there's a very convenient like taxi station where there's a bunch of like red taxis that are all just lined up ready to pick up the passengers. And So I got a taxi and gave them the address, and you know, they don't say thank you, they don't say hi. They're just like, tell me where you want to go, let's go. All right, so
On to the point.
Yes, so they're very efficient. So I tell them where I want to go, start going. They were talking in the taxi a lot, so I thought they were having a discussion with me. So I would like talk back to them. And it turns out that they weren't actually talking to me. They were talking to someone else on the phone who was also a taxi driver who was giving them giving them more orders, more clients to take on after they were driving me. So they would have like four phones on the dashboard, like each, like one of them is a maps app, another one is like some radio, like GPS thing, another one is like for some other company. Very hardworking people, you know. But I arrived. In terms of the accommodations, I stayed in one of my grandparents' apartment in Hong Kong, which I'm very, very humbled to have the opportunity to stay there. Because, you know, the real estate in Hong Kong is very, it's very bad, you know. So it's a privilege to be able to stay in the apartment, but it's a convenient area. So lots of restaurants, food nearby, 7-Elevens, everything you need within, like, I don't know, like walking distance. So it was good. And then once we settled down from the flight, we just got ready to explore Hong Kong, go to different landmark places. But I wouldn't say too much of it was an exploration of the culture, because a lot of that culture already actually exists in Vancouver, in terms of, like, you can eat your dim sum, you can eat your Chinese food. And there's so much of the Hong Kong diaspora is actually in Vancouver that it doesn't feel like you're experiencing that much change. Because the same type of, I don't want to say rude, but I want to say, like, straightforward, efficient service is still there. You know, it's here if you go to a Hong Kong cafe in Richmond, and it's going to be there when you go to one in Hong Kong. So,
no, I think that's one of the advantages that come from living in Vancouver, is that it's so diverse in terms of, you know, the food you eat, the people you meet, you know, all those cultures, that you almost get a taste of what it's like to experience a certain culture, and you're not, you know, overwhelmed or struck by it too intensively when it actually comes to it. But yeah, no, I mean, I feel that for me too, you know, going into Korean restaurants is definitely different than going to a more Western place. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I think it's sometimes it's a bit homey as well. You know, you're experiencing something that's more familiar. But, you know, before this episode, we were actually having a conversation about all those magnificent foods that you had. Mm. But is there anything that struck you or is memorable for you that you experienced, whether it's, because, you know, we're all foodies, you know, we love food, we enjoy it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we have an appreciation for food. But yeah, is there anything that's memorable for you? Doesn't need to be food, but something that, you know, just stuck to you throughout your trip to Hong Kong?
I'd say, like, you know, I think Matthew probably, I wouldn't say he taught me, but I guess he gave me this insight, which is, you know, traveling is, you know, obviously it's a chance for you to explore the world and what the world actually entails, but it can actually also be very philosophical, in the sense that you learn a lot of new things and you're able to expand your worldview, right? So I can come out here and I can say that I tried a lot of different foods and it was really yummy, but I think that's more surface level stuff, right? That I really like these foods and they were very enjoyable. I think what really I learned on this trip is, and I can give the example of me going to China, is when I went to China, I was able to eat a lot of food, and a lot of it was seafood, and it was extremely, extremely cheap. Like, you know, if you went to Earl's in Vancouver and you got like a dozen oysters, it'd probably be like 30, 50 bucks, right? But you can get a dozen oysters in China for like 10 bucks Canadian, you know, maybe even 6 or 8 bucks Canadian. You can get a whole fish for like $2, and it's delicious. It's like fresh. So right out the lake outside. And I was just like, wow, like, this food is amazing. It tastes really good. It's fresh, you know. How are they able to you know, even sell this and make money off of it? Well, I think it's reflective of, like, you know, obviously the economy of the place that you're living in. You know, it's cheap for us as visitors, but it's not cheap for the locals that actually live there. So I think that's one aspect that I really try to appreciate, which is, like, I'm in the advantageous position right now as a tourist. And I think it's a reflection of the culture of the nation as well, right? And I'd say the other thing that I took away the most, at least from my time in China, was the amount of, like, technological advancement and how efficient it was living there. There was no, like, physical menus anywhere in any restaurant. You always had a QR code and you would scan it, and it would give you all the options, and you could just order on your phone and the food would come. You would always pay with some sort of QR code, so either like Alipay or like WeChat. And I've never used WeChat before in my life before that, so I was kind of like, where's Visa? Like, MasterCard, Amex? Like, Where's the tap, man? Where's the tap? There's no tap? But there's no tap. There is no tap. So
I didn't know that WeChat offered transactions until now.
Right. So it's really weird. So basically, you know, I don't want to get into the politics of it, but essentially, like, China, they have their own payment system. And so they like to use WeChat or they like to use Alipay. And so it's essentially like, if you're selling me something, you'll just have a piece of paper with a QR code on it. And then you'll write down how much money I owe you. And I scan your QR code. And then there you go. You get my money. It's really easy. It's just a QR code that you scan instead of, you know, like typing in the number and then like Visa, Master tapping. It's just a QR code that you scan, which is really convenient. And I didn't really understand it until I lived there for like a week or so. It was really efficient. I didn't realize, you know, that Google Maps doesn't work there, you know?
It doesn't work.
Yeah, so I know that, you know, you can't use Google, Facebook, YouTube. I know that all of those are censored in China. But I thought that if you got a VPN or something, that you can still use Google Maps, right? But it turns out that if you use the VPN and you use Google Maps, it actually takes you to, like, the middle of nowhere because it's the map information is completely inaccurate. So there's been times where, you know, I would, like, you know, try to go to, like, a place and I would ask the locals. And I'm like, how long does it take me to walk there? Because coming from Hong Kong, like, Hong Kong, you do not need a car. Like, you can walk everywhere eventually. You can get to any place in Hong Kong just with your own 2 feet. And it's easy. But in China, you can't really do that because it's not as developed. So I would ask the locals, I'm like, how long does it take to get there? And they're like, 30-minute walk. I'm like, but Google Maps says like 5 minutes from here. And so I'm like, I don't trust the locals. So I just start walking with Google Maps. I walk with Google Maps, five minutes, like 10 minutes. I'm like, where's the place? Like, it's like, is this some random like industrial area? Like, where am I, right? It turns out it's completely inaccurate, like Google Maps, because the government is not actually giving them all the information for like their geography. So Google Maps doesn't actually have a accurate depiction of what the land of China is like. So then that's where I learned my lesson. I was like, oh, I had to download all the Chinese apps and, you know.
You gotta trust the locals.
Yes, you gotta trust the locals. You gotta download all the Chinese maps, download the Chinese Uber, download all the apps, and then it works out. So everything is accurate there. You just have to adapt with the language. And I think if you don't know Chinese, it's definitely like really difficult to live around there. But yeah, like I think that made me realize like how much of a cultural difference there is between Vancouver and a place like China, where I feel like everywhere I look, there's like some sort of technology embedded in it that's making it so efficient. And there's so many prosperous business people, tech people in China. And I look over here at UBC, not to say it's a bad thing, but I draw the comparison where I'm like, wow, like the Faculty of Arts at UBC is the biggest faculty at UBC. And I don't know 100% the statistics, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Faculty of Arts was the biggest faculty in every like North American university. I wouldn't be surprised. And so that begs the question for me, which is like, it seems like in North America, there's much more of an appreciation for the liberal arts, right? For writers, for creators, for artists. And it's okay if you don't venture off into STEM. It's okay if you decide you don't want to study computer science. We have people for that. But I feel like in China, there's so much of a big emphasis on STEM. I don't really see the need for the liberal arts in China. It almost seems like it's not really necessary anymore. And so I came on here the last episode and we talked a little bit. The last time I came here was specifically the day that I got accepted into UBC Law. So it was a very monumental moment for me. And we talked about that for the show. But, you know, it's obviously a big accomplishment that we talked about and how, you know, our parents would feel about it, how the common person in North America would feel about it. But it made me realize that, wow, in China, if I was to tell someone in China that I studied law, it might not even be that big of a deal. Like, it might just be like, oh, okay. It's like the same if you told someone that you studied like philosophy or something, right? It's just like a job, right? Whereas if you told someone in China that, oh, hey, I'm actually in tech, like I'm designing like the new like competitor to Tesla, they'll be like, oh, wow, like that's really impressive. Like you're designing like robots and stuff. Like it made me realize how much of a difference there is in terms of like what careers, what subjects, academic disciplines that we actually place value on. So that was a very eye-opening experience for me in China.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, it's not even about just the culture. I guess it goes into the culture, but the difference in values that people put into certain things, whether it's careers or, you know, people or, you know, all that sort of stuff really makes that culture. And I think it's different. It's sometimes it's quite unusual because we're not familiar with it, but I think it's worth learning about, you know, all those different things that other people see importance in that we necessarily don't. But yeah, I mean, that seems like a really nice trip. I would love to go on a trip with all of you guys to Hong Kong and go to that specific seafood buffet. All
let's
you can
do
eat.
It. But, 100%. Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, before we go into Matthew's story, you know, I think that's going to be a very interesting one. Why don't we get through some ads and some PSAs, and I'll meet you guys right back. So here we go. Enjoy these.
You never see me again.
Ebola.
Xin chào và hẹn gặp lại.
Happy birthday!
I go to National Engineering College.
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 Fridays from 2 to 3:30 p.m., it's the Beppe Crespin Presents radio show.
It's CITR's 24 hours of radio art in a snack-sized format.
Difficult music, harsh electronics, dark ambient, drones, spoken word, cut-up collage, and general Crespin weirdness.
Beppe Crespin Presents, Fridays at 2 p.m. on CITR-FM 101.9.
Streaming at player.citr.ca.
Supplies for hormone injections and safer substance use are now available for free from AMS SASC and peer support. Folks can order supplies online or drop by during office hours to access these resources. Confidential forms and additional information can be found on their website, www.amssasc.ca, or you can drop by either office located on the third floor of the Nest. This initiative is part of the SASC and Peer Support's commitment to providing equitable access to harm reduction supplies and can be accessed by anyone in the community.
I'ma keep on talking about it because it's true for me.
Pride got you down? Brace yourself for Vancouver's ShameFest 2024. ShameFest is a burning effigy of queer failure and the outsider artistic community terrorizing the downtown east side. From August 1st to August 5th, ShameFest has 8 dehumanizing live music and artistic events that will cost you less money than attending just one of the corporate pride parties, because we know you're broke. Embrace shame and purchase tickets now at heroinmart.com/products/ShameFest2024. heroinmart.com/products/shame-fest-2024. We'll see you at ShameFest.
Maybe I'm just a manic pixie pacifist.
Summer Light is back, baby. On August 10th, spend the day with 14 local Vancouver acts, headlined by the Golden Age of Wrestling and actors. This year, you can attend your favorite indie music festival with no cost whatsoever. That's right, admission is free. In the East Side's very own Strathcona neighborhood, Summerlight is here to give new artists a chance to bring vibrancy to a part of Vancouver that so many artists call home. Summerlight Festival is brought to you by Light Organ Records. We can't wait to see you on August 10th.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. For those of you who have listened to the first half, that was Mark's story of his journey to Hong Kong, his small trip to Hong Kong and how it was like. But why don't we move on to Matthew and his trip to, where was it again?
I went to quite a few places, actually.
Run me through the process.
Yeah, we started, I went to Switzerland first, a few places in Switzerland, and then I went to Vienna in Austria, then I went to Budapest, and then I ended in Sibiu, which is like a smaller city in Romania.
And how long was your trip in total?
In total, about 1 month.
Oh, okay, so that's quite a long trip. Where did you go first, and how was that like, you know, how was the plane like, everything else?
So I first flew from Vancouver to Zurich. I took Edelweiss. I think it's like a Swiss airline that I'd never heard about before. A lot of pros, some cons as well. We were talking a bit before this about airplane food. I personally love airplane food. It's one of the things I look most forward to when I go on an airplane. The airplane food was great, like really good. And then they gave you like actual silverware, which I felt was so fancy. I've heard that they have that in like first class and business class, but I've personally not been able to have those experiences before. So yeah, flying on Edelweiss, I got to actually have like a really, really cold like fork and knife and, you know, get to do that. The only con was it was like a really small like airplane seat. For reference, I'm like roughly 6 feet tall. And so the seat in front of me like was pushing into my leg. I didn't have like any leg room. And the gentleman next to me was also a bit larger. So it was straight away. I was like, oh, no, I can't do this for like 11 hours. This is going to be terrible. But I think the person next to me got like was also feeling the discomfort. And so they actually called the stewardess over and upgraded to like the business class. So I just had like a full couch, like just wow. I put the middle divider up and I just had my full couch. I actually laid down for a little bit when I was sleeping. Nice. So yeah, that was my flight there. Switzerland in general was just stunning. I myself feel really privileged to be able to grow up here in BC. Some people say it's one of the most beautiful places in the world for nature and scenery and like and stuff like that. But yeah, Switzerland was, it blew me away. It just felt like I was like in a Studio Ghibli movie, just like the landscapes and everything is so pristinely clean. We stayed in this place called Interlaken. And it's like a huge lake. And there's just like houses and infrastructure built around the lake, which I found was a bit different. I've been to like Banff in Alberta, which is like equally stunning, but you'd have to like drive there, and there's not so much like people like physically living there. So Switzerland was really amazing. Though to note to Mark's point earlier about being in China, everything was so cheap and accessible. Like my God. Are things expensive in Switzerland?
Oh, really? Compared to Vancouver or just...
Compared to Vancouver.
It's more expensive in Switzerland?
Yeah. I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know. But Switzerland, like, I think, like, the top five highest paid cities in Europe are all in Switzerland. like they, like the Swiss franc is really, really strong. And so, yeah, for reference, just like any at McDonald's, it's like $30 plus for a person.
No way.
Yeah.
30 what?
For McDonald's. Just like an average meal anywhere. Like it's really difficult to eat under, I'd say, like $40 Canadian a person.
So it's like eating at a theater every day.
Right. Yeah. One of the more trivial things that happened was I didn't know that a lot of places in Europe, they'll ask you for like still or sparkling water. And if you ask for still water, they won't give you tap water, but they'll give you like a physical bottle of water.
Oh.
So I didn't know that. But when I asked for still water, just it was like a glass bottle of water, not like a huge one. And after when we got the bill, it was $9 Canadian for this bottle of water.
Still water.
Still water, yeah.
How much is the sparkling water?
I don't know. I personally don't really drink sparkling water.
So they charge you for water too?
Yeah, it was going to the wash, like going to the public washroom.
They charge you?
You have to pay to go to the washroom.
Yeah, you got
to
pay like $1 Canadian to just Why? Use the washroom.
Even if you're a customer at the restaurant?
Not in restaurants, but in like public areas.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
if you're in like a mall?
Yeah, in the mall.
You have to pay in the mall to go to the
In
washroom.
The mall, yeah.
What?
And that's like not just in Switzerland, but like a lot of places in Europe, yeah.
We actually want to go into this in more detail. So is there like a gate that opens up when you pay? How does that, is there a person that takes the transaction? How does that work?
Almost everywhere I went, it was like a machine and there's like a gate. It's like when you go on the SkyTrain and you like gotta like put in your compass card and then it goes. It's like that. Like they have like a tap. You can use your credit card. Some places that are not as developed, you've gotta like have coins on you. And if you don't have, like I was in the Vienna like central train station or whatever, and if you want to use the washroom or the storage locker, which is what I was trying to do, you have to have physical coins on you. And so I didn't have them. I just had like the cash. So I was just like running around looking at like these vendors and store owners. I went to like the food court area of the train station, and every single person was like, you got to have coins. And I was like, can I trade you for coins, or do you know somewhere where you can get coins? And they're like, no, I'm telling you, this entire train station, there's no place that you can, you know, switch for coins. So a lot of culture shocks for sure.
In that case, are coins more valuable, do you think, or is it just more difficult to obtain?
I'm not sure.
Like, do you think people are hesitant to give their coin?
I think it's more like Mark and I used to work in a bubble tea shop, and so I think I understand why they're reluctant, because when you start out the day, you have only a certain amount of coins and cash that you need to use for your customers.
Oh, I see.
And so if someone is constantly coming in, like you might run out of the coins that you need for the day.
Interesting. Wow, I did not know that about Switzerland. And I'm sure it's a great place as well. Where was the next journey to, from Switzerland to Romania?
So from Switzerland, I was there for a little under a week. And then I took a train to go to Vienna in Austria.
Interesting. And how was that like for you?
That was a really great time because I took it's called a sleeper train. And basically just for the whole night, you just get to sleep in a little bunk bed. And much better than like a regular train seat or even taking an airplane. So
that sounds really, I've only seen that in, you know, on the internet. Is it cheap?
I think relatively. I think it's a bit cheaper than taking an airplane. And I think the really interesting thing about Europe is everything is so connected by trains. Like you really could just take a train and get to anywhere. While as I think in Canada, although we do have railways, to get to some places, you might need to take what are those things called?
Ferries.
Ferries, or it's like a bus. What is that called?
Like a sea bus.
like a physical bus to get somewhere. Great Greyhound.
Oh, Greyhound. Like a shuttle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like in Europe, you could really just get to, even though like the smaller cities, like it's so connected and accessible by railways.
Interesting. And how was it just one night in the train?
Yes.
And how was that like? Was the sleep fine? I'm assuming that you're with other people. There's another bunk somewhere right beside you, and there's, you know, other strangers sleeping, you know. How was that like for you?
Yes. So at that point I was traveling with my mom, so we had a cabin, and so it was like a bunk bed. I was on top and then she was sleeping in the bottom. It was quite tight, but I mean, you know, for an overnight ride where you get to like lay down and sleep, I had a great time. And they also offer you like a tiny bottle of like champagne in the beginning, which I thought was such a kind gesture. Overall, I'd highly recommend the sleeper trains. Yeah.
Do they have washrooms? Where do you like brush your teeth there? And is there like shower available? Like, how is that like?
I don't recall there being a shower, but there were definitely washrooms.
Interesting.
Did you need to pay to use the washroom too, or no?
On that, no, you didn't.
You did not need to pay. That's good. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
You know what? I can't even imagine how many people failed to use a washroom because they couldn't pay. Not because they financially couldn't, but they just didn't have the coins like you. And
yeah.
I mean, what do you even do in that situation? Like, are all washrooms like that? Where you have to... Is there like an emergency route where you can go to and do your thing?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't want to generalize and say like there are no free public washrooms in Switzerland or in Austria or Hungary. When I was in Romania, I noticed there were a lot more like free public washrooms. But in general, yeah, like I don't know. Like if you didn't have the coins, you couldn't just use the washroom. Coming from where we're from, where it's like, I feel like here, if you like set up a shop like outside of the washroom and be like, you need to pay like 50 cents to use it, I feel like that'd be like borderline like a humanitarian like crisis, you know? Like that's
right.
That's got to be against like the UN laws or something.
It's a human right. That's a human
right. It's a human right. But I mean, you know, different strokes for different folks.
Right. Yeah. No. That's that is interesting. I know that in places like clubs, they sell things in the washroom, but, you know, they don't charge you. But this question is actually directed to both of you. I don't know if you guys spend a lot of time at night where you guys travel, but how is the nightlife in Romania or in Switzerland, and how is it like in Hong Kong? Maybe we would start with Matthew. How is it like if you had that night experience?
I didn't have too much of a nightlife experience per se, but what I did notice was places closed quite early.
In Switzerland or Romania?
I would say more Switzerland, but I got that kind of vibe kind of everywhere I went. I know there's places that there's cities where things are open very late, but the places that I went, I noticed, you know, if you wanted like a midnight snack or something, you'd really need to, you know, plan that out, get that early, because once it hits like, you know, 9 p.m., like there's so many things that just shut down. Like the only things that are open, ironically, was like shawarma shops.
Oh.
Yeah, those are the ones that are open late. But in general, things close quite early.
Nice. How about you, Mark? How was it like in Hong Kong?
I think like the nightlife there, I'd say it's probably better in the sense that like, depends on what district you're living in Hong Kong. But like, I think generally speaking, like things are open pretty late, if not like 24/7. And you're always going to get service anywhere you go. Like the contrast would be like, you know, if I wanted a midnight snack, I wouldn't need to plan it out. I can just like walk outside and there's going to be people like everywhere at any time. There's also like vendors that are open only during the nighttime. So it's kind of like the night market in Vancouver, but it's like late night. The vendors, that's when they open up, and they open up for the rest of the night. So you can go there, you can shop, you can eat. There's also there's also kind of like a red light district, in the sense that, like, there's, beside the markets, there's going to be some women that are waiting for you beside the alleys, dressed up, and they're ready to approach you. So there is that culture during mm-hmm. during the nighttime. So you want to avoid the sidewalks, and you want to just go on the big roads. But yeah, that's the nightlife in Hong Kong.
That's nice. I mean, I think for a nightlife to be exciting, the stores have to be open. I think mm-hmm. once the stores, the restaurants, and, you know, the convenience stores, and, you know, like those, you know, places where they do activities closes, the night kind of just darkens a bit, I think. Like, once everything seems active, that's when, you know, it seems like the nightlife is alive. But yeah, I mean, sometimes I do like it when it closes a bit early. I mean, are you guys more into doing things early on the day, or do you guys enjoy that nightlife and, you know, spread your wings at that time?
I guess I'll go first. I mean, I think if you asked me this question like 2-3 years ago, I'd probably say like I'm more of a night owl, in the sense that like I want to be out until 3 a.m. and, you know, I'd probably want to have some fun. And I think places like Hong Kong, where there's so much to do at night, would definitely be my cup of tea. But I think now I'm starting to like feel like an old man, in the sense that like I have to wake up early, I gotta sleep early. So I'm not too bothered by the absence of a nightlife, for sure.
I think having spent the majority of my life in Vancouver, I do like hanging out at nighttime, but the things that are available to us are more restricted than maybe like what you said in Hong Kong. I remember when I was a little bit younger, I definitely spend like, especially my summer nights, just like out. But like, you know, there's not so many places that are open per se. You probably just go to like a parking lot or like to the beach and just like chat it up. But that, no, I agree with Mark. I think if, you know, where we are, it influences, you know, what we're able to do and what our behaviors.
For Matthew, do you have anything, just shortly, what you learned throughout your month vacation or trip that you want to share as like your last remark?
I've never been to Europe before that. And I wouldn't say I have a particular strong interest beforehand in Europe, but I think going there and seeing like the history that's just everywhere, and getting to experience like a different kind of multiculturalism, seeing so many different, you know, cultures of white people, it was quite eye opening. Yeah, and as Mark said a bit earlier, I think traveling is such an educational and philosophical experience. So
I would love to travel more. I completely agree with, you know, both of you guys. It really is educational in a sense where you can't read it off of something, or you can't study it. You really just have to take it into action and go into that experience. And you don't even need, you know, prior experience. You just need to begin, and then it kind of just trickles on from that. But yeah, thank you guys for sharing your stories. I'm sure we could have gone, you know, very, very in depth with, you know, these stories, but unfortunately we only have an hour. So like I said, with many of my viewers and my guests, I do a small game at the end. And the reason why I like to do this game is because, first of all, it's sometimes kind of silly, so it's like a nice transition, but sometimes it just brings out your immediate thought, you know, how you think in a very short amount of time. So it's a would you rather section that I do. I'll come up, I'll give you guys some options, and just in a few seconds, just answer which one you would prefer. And because this episode was about traveling, we'll stick with that genre. So, are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
All right. Would you rather be able to understand and speak every language in the world or be able to teleport anywhere at any time?
I would want to teleport anywhere, anytime.
All right.
After traveling to a myriad of places, I see the value in speaking another language because I'm very lucky that like English is like the universal language that people tend to branch out into. But yeah, if you teleport anywhere, but like you're not able to communicate with the people, it can get really hard to do even like the basic things.
Right, but there's also Google Translate.
It's harder in practice, though. You know,
right, I mean, but teleportation is like, you know
what?
Make your life easier.
This is it's almost like a dream crushing theory. But if you actually knew how to teleport, I'm sure you're gonna get caught by some high authority and will get manipulated in some way. Like, there's no way you will be.
But you could also teleport out of them, though.
That's so true. That's so true. But you know, you'll have like the most wanted or something like that.
Right.
But all right, next one. Would you rather travel first class everywhere but only stay in 2-star hotels or stay in 5-star hotels but fly in a middle seat in economy every time you fly? I got my answer right here.
I have neither experienced first class.
Just imagine yourself.
So they both sound like really great. It depends how often, you know. Like I didn't really get like the first and business class thing, just because like it's so much more expensive, like thousands of dollars more expensive. But I think if you're traveling really often, then I think it's probably like the first class thing probably. But for myself, I've always traveled economy, and I don't mind being in the middle seat if I can have this like wondrous resort 5-star hotel.
Same. I think I'd take the hotel, man, because I think like if it's like a 2-star hotel, like I'd rather like the latter part of my trip be nicer than the first part of my trip be nicer, right? Because then it's like kind of like you're downgrading, and then I don't want to sleep with like cockroaches and mice running around when I was previously on a plane eating sashimi and like laying down on like white bed sheets, right? So
I choose the 5-star hotel as well. I think I would rather prefer, you know, the majority of my portion of the trip be better. But yeah, the next one is, would you rather do a shark cage dive with great whites or skydive?
I would say skydive. I've always thought about skydiving, and I don't know. Is it statistically safer than jumping into a shark? I don't know.
I mean, you're in a cage, so I don't know if it's that likely for a great white. And I don't think great whites are as aggressive as we think they are, I'm assuming.
Okay.
Because they can't see. And unless you're spilling blood somewhere around your body, they probably just chilling.
I see.
I mean, I think I'd probably do the great white thing just because I'm scared of heights, and I don't
really?
Like the I don't like the feeling of falling.
Oh, I love it.
I hate the feeling of falling. It doesn't feel good.
But it feels like flying for a moment.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but then after that moment, you're kind of just dying. I feel my fat like holding, like it's like bracing itself in the air.
It'd also be shorter, right? Like skydiving is not that long, while as like diving into great white. I don't know which one would be a longer experience.
Well, you know what? Cage dive 5 minutes, skydive 2 minutes.
Skydive.
Right, but cage dive, you just have to like survive. You know what I'm saying? You just have to like chill in there. But skydiving, there's actually like a skill involved. You have to like start parachuting after too, and like have the correct landing. You know what I'm saying?
I guess so, yeah,
that's true.
All right, last one is: would you rather go on an epic trip where lots of things go wrong, or a boring trip where nothing goes wrong?
I mean, just for the experience, I think a long trip where a lot of things. I mean, I will say traveling definitely gets very tiring and can bring out, like you were saying, how Mark was saying how the heat brings out aggression. I feel like long periods of travel naturally brings out the dark side of people, and sometimes. But I would still stick to a long trip where lots of things happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'd stick with the epic trip where a lot of bad things happen, just because I think a short, boring trip where everything goes wrong, I just wouldn't even call that a trip anymore. You know, I just call it, it's like a walk in the park. So I go for the epic trip.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for coming on my show. I hope you guys had some fun. Next week, we have some other guests coming on, so please be excited for those. I hope you guys both have a great rest of the summer. And you know what? If you guys have the time, please come back, and we'll do another discussion.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us. Thanks for leaning with me.
All right. This was Leaning with Jeff. I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of the afternoon, and I will see you all next week. Bye-bye, everyone.